All right, the recorder's running now.
Do you need to go off and catch it?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'll just let it go. It hasn't been out for a while.
Okay, you have an electronic leash, so if it gets too far away, you can push a button and it drags it back?
Yeah, something like that. Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your hosts, Jorn Sutai Vampyr and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome, warriors, to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. Oh, but we've run out of Klingon books, so we're now having to do other things. I am one of your hosts.
So we have adopted a lotus flower for you people this time.
That was my co-host, John, Jorn, and I am Jajim, and welcome to Bound by Honor. So, yes, the title of the book...
Welcome, all you intelligent people out there.
Yes. The title of the story we are looking at, it's part of a compilation...
A series of stories.
Series of stories, okay.
Set in the Deep Space Nine universe.
All right.
And today's story is The Lotus Flower.
By Una McCormick. And Una is a great writer. So, Lotus Flower. Published in 2004.
I didn't write that. That was her title.
Right. So the series is called Worlds of Deep Space Nine, and it consists of three volumes that have two novellas in each volume. And today we are looking at the Cardassian story, The Lotus Flower, and next time we'll be looking at the Andorian story. So there it is. That's what we got going on here.
Now, I'm going to say this. They're called short stories. You call them novella.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll bet if you put them in normal font size, because they seem to be reduced in font size in the book, and printed them out, they would be the same length as a 1960s science fiction novel.
Yeah.
So.
Like a Perry Rodan story or something like that?
Well, any of them, yeah.
Because novels were shorter in those days.
Well, not only that, but the Perry Rodans were actually a magazine.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot like the Doc Savage magazines that came out once a month.
All right, well...
In fact, apparently, I've never been able to find them yet, but apparently, a side note, Perry Rodan has been recorded in film in Germany.
I have no doubt. So, The Lotus Flower, would you please give us a brief summary of the plot?
The last world ravaged by the Dominion War is also the last one on which Miles O'Brien ever imagined building a life. A side note here, I'm drifting away from the description. I thought he was assigned to Starfleet Academy right at the end of DS9, but... What do I know? As he joins in the reconstruction of Cardassia's infrastructure, his wife Keiko spearheads the planet's difficult agricultural renewal. But Cardassia's struggle to remake itself from the fledgling democracy backed by Elam Garrick or the people's rediscovery of their spiritual past is not without opposition. As the outside efforts to help rebuild its civilization come under attack by those who reject any alien influence.
Mm-hmm.
But again, wasn't it your understanding at the end of DS9, Miles was going back to teach at the Academy?
Well, yeah. However, that didn't take...
That doesn't stop a good story. Yeah, I know.
It didn't take into account... we could go down the speculative road forever and say, oh, well, Miles...
What? There's no plot holes in Star Trek?
Miles went to the Academy and Keiko got a better job and Miles said, but I want to stay here while you're there. And she said, no, I had enough of that crap on Deep Space Nine living on Bajor while you were on the station. So you're coming with me or it's over. And so Miles said, oh, okay. we could speculate all day. But as we also know, the books are not canon. So anything can happen. And whether it's canon or not, I don't care. If it's a good story, I'm all for it. I don't care about canon one way or the other. Just write me a good story.
Well, the thing is, I think, too, you don't need to use Miles and Keiko.
No, of course not.
In this particular story, they could have picked anybody. They could have picked total unknowns.
Oh, yeah.
From the Federation to come in and do this.
Well, Una could have made up a whole new thing, but... We want to know what is going on with the characters that we are familiar with. And for Una to make up new characters, it wouldn't be as appealing. Now you put Miles and Keiko in there, throw in Elam Garrick and a few others that you know, and you're going to sell books.
Okay.
So I at least that's what I think. More speculation.
Again, I'm from a generation where every time you picked up a science fiction novel, the characters were completely different. We didn't really have continuing characters for the most part. Trilogies were really, really, really big events.
Yeah. I don't know. Did they do books? Gunsmoke books?
Those are Westerns.
Well,
what do I know about them?
My guess is if anybody was writing those books, the marshal was Matt Dillon. Okay. So I don't think they would change that. Nobody'd buy the book. So
yeah, but even if you go to the Asimov books, in his Foundation series, they were spaced out enough that with the exception of the robot, I can't remember his name right now, but except for him, the characters were completely different in each one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's Asimov. He's a master. He's. But of course it does continue with the same robot, right?
Only at the beginning and the end.
Mm.
Everything in the middle, you lose Art Danielle, I think it was. You lose him.
Ah.
Until he comes back around at the end to tie things up.
Ah. I'll have to read those again. I think I've read them, but it's been a long, long time.
If it's been a long, long time, you probably haven't read the last few of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, tell you what, let's get into this book, and why don't you start us off with your overall impressions?
There's very little action in this story, and it all happens to revolve around an attempted suicide bombing by a Cardassian girl.
Mm-hmm.
And... oddly enough, her mother happens to be sitting in the briefing stand when she's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I haven't written this up, but one of the things that kind of bothered me was this particular series of events takes place in the middle of the book and is resolved quite a long ways before the end of the story. So that just seems odd from a written story perspective.
Yeah.
Usually you wrap up the main plot like that, and then you got an epilogue, and you're done. But this had to keep going.
Yeah.
And what does it take to drive Cardassian politics and get something done? Elam Garrick apparently has to peel back a curtain on some old political stuff, and which is leading into these new intrigues to find out what's happening and why these particular new sects are appearing and causing problems. And maybe it's just me, but I never really got a good impression of just what O'Brien's project was.
Mm-hmm.
What was he working on? And if it was just an agricultural scheme, why the hell was it so damn controversial? Or why couldn't both projects get funded?
Right. That, and yeah. And I think I addressed that a little later on, what I think. But, okay. My overall impressions. I really like a good cerebral story. One without a lot of things happening all over the place. And I like this story because it got inside the heads of the characters a lot. And we got to see their thoughts and attitudes. Now, as you said, there wasn't a lot of action. And what little action there was over and done pretty quickly right in the middle of the story. But I don't think that was exactly the point. I think it was more of an examination of what people think, how they think, and how it affects an overall situation. That's just what I think.
And based on that, I would have liked to have seen more of what's going on in their heads, what's being plotted by the plotters, and what the different sects are doing. What was, oh, I'm drawing a blank now on the two groups, but there were two basic groups in conflict here. One was the Cardassian group, one was the Bajor group.
Right.
And we really didn't get into their philosophies other than a few cursive demands that Naira
mm-hmm.
made when she was rigged up with the bomb.
Yeah.
So it should have gone deeper, I think, to be a good cerebral story.
Yeah. But I don't think it was, the story was actually about the incident as much, or even the two factions, okay, that were against each other, the Bajoran faction and the other group, which I don't remember what they're called at the moment, but it'll come back to me.
But when Garrick went to interrogate that other Cardassian, and draw more things out to what's going on, they could have gone a bit deeper there, too.
Yeah. I think it was called the True Way or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the True Way, the Cardassian group, and the Bajoran group. It was a religious icon that was there. All right, so
yeah.
Continuing on.
But you got two more points, so.
Yeah. Continuing on, I did think it was slightly far-fetched how the Cardassian attitudes had changed so much from being totalitarian to accepting democracy as easily as they seem to be doing, especially for some of the Cardassian characters in this story, particularly Gul Maset. I'm not as surprised by Gamor's attitudes, though. The family seemed more open to new ideas. And the Gamor in here is actually a nephew.
He was the prime minister, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was a nephew of the Gamor that Kira dealt with during the series. I enjoyed the exchanges between O'Brien and Garrick a lot. They were very familiar and very fun. I think it would have probably worked out that if Bashir had been there, it would have been probably the same dialogue. The author did a great job writing the characters. They were very recognizable. And so those are my impressions.
Well, based on some of the stuff I've been watching recently on YouTube regarding Bashir and Garrick, I think it would have been a lot different than what he dealt with O'Brien.
Ah.
Because according to some of the fan theories now, and believe it or not, the actor who played Garrick is actually even coming out and saying, yeah, they're pretty much right on the point. There was a infatuation, shall we say, between Garrick and Bashir.
Oh, yeah.
Not on Bashir's part, but Garrick had a crush on him.
Garrick was stringing Bashir along so much. that was the funny thing.
Yeah. But according to the guy that played Garrick, there was kind of a love tension going on there.
Oh, well, there was a lot of that in the show. I mean, between Bashir and O'Brien and...
Yeah, but that was a bromance. That was, you know, that was typical of guys that meet in a bar.
Yeah.
O'Brien knew he was going to go home to his wife every night.
Yeah.
Well, when she was there.
Right. Otherwise, he was going to go home and tear up the apartment and build build models.
That she wasn't going to like, yeah.
Yeah, that he had to get torn down before she got back. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we've got the characters. We've talked about a few.
Believe it or not, Molly is even listed as a character in this story.
And Molly, yes. Miles, Keiko, and Molly, Elam. Some unfamiliar new Cardassian characters. And a new Vedic, Yavir, who seems to be a peacemaker.
And, he's a Vedic.
Yeah, but he is quite good at talking someone down from doing something rash, and he's also quite respected.
The thing was, except for one particular Vedic who became head of the order in DS9, the Vedics were very insightful people that were very much for peace and helping out anyone who needed help.
Yeah, well, almost all of them.
Like you said, except for the one that ends up being right in charge of their order.
All right. We have a couple of very familiar Cardassian people. We have Alon Gamor. Well, not Alon Gamor. He's not familiar. He's a nephew of a familiar one. And then we have Gul Masset, who is no longer Gul Masset because they've gone a different direction with their military.
But again, I think even that Dr. Naiath, he wasn't Cardassian, he wasn't Bajiran, he wasn't human. Wasn't he the blue alien race that had to breathe the stuff?
Oh, Benzite?
Yeah.
I don't know, it could be, I might have missed that. All right.
He was a different alien.
Yeah. So under things, you say, not a lot here.
Not a lot.
And I say, I thought there was more here than you did, okay? O'Brien living on Cardassia. Now, that is a far-fetched notion. Fans all know what his particular attitudes are towards Cardassians. He made them quite clear during the Next Gen episode, The Wounded, when he said to Duran, "It's not you I hate, Cardassian. It's what I became because of you." And often his marks were quite racist in the show. You know, and we also know he can be a tad whiny at times. I'm surprised he wasn't constantly expressing his desire to get off Cardassia through the whole story.
Well, here's the thing. O'Brien is an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
O'Brien was given a project to do. Does it matter if it's on Cardassia or in a waste extractor or wherever it's at? O'Brien takes on a project and just does it. He's more of a hands-on engineer than even Scotty was,
mm-hmm.
because Scotty was an officer.
Yeah.
O'Brien was not an officer. So O'Brien was, get his hands in the muck and do the work.
And he does in this story. He tries to fix an air conditioner.
Yeah. He's sitting in the offices so much, and he's bored out of his mind so much, but that fits O'Brien because he wants to get out and fix that air conditioner.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I now see his part of in this project, I didn't really
understand what it was.
Yeah. His part. Now Keiko's I did. Okay, she's directing a project to reclaim land to grow food. What more do you need to
say? Biology.
Yeah. But
she's a botanist.
What O'Brien was up to, I don't know. And, you know, probably really doesn't matter because he was taken out of it pretty quickly. Now, Nyra, backed by, the true way, is more what I would expect from more Cardassians, especially those who had some power. So, Masset's attitude to me is a surprise. Okay. And what Masset did was apparently he's a big wig in the current version of Cardassian security, and he gets called in to try to stop Nyra from blowing everybody up.
In fact, I think he's got his men training a gun on her.
Yeah.
To do the job.
That's right. Yeah, he had snipers in there. So, and you know, one thing that I found interesting was how many times it was referred to Masette looking a lot like Gul Dukat, okay, when they are indeed the same actor.
Okay.
Yeah. Were you aware of that?
But then the actor that played Gul Dukat also played a Romulan.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, were you aware?
He's all over the place.
Were you aware that?
No.
Yeah. Gul Masette was on in that episode that I mentioned earlier, The Wounded, and he was the head Cardassian who met with Picard. And you could distinguish him from Dukat by he had some weird sideburns, and they wore those funny-looking helmets, too.
Well, remember that the Cardassians were going through major changes in their makeup from when they were first introduced to until DS9.
Yeah. Well, all of them did. There were, you know, this is kind of an aside, but have you ever noticed the change in Quark from the first time he was on screen to the end, how his features softened?
Are you referring to the Last Outpost?
No, actually, I'm referring to the first episode of Deep Space Nine. If you look at the first appearances of Quark as Quark, his features were very, very angular. And he looked a lot more sinister than he did as time went on, when his features became more rounded and soft and less angular. You'll notice the same thing with Odo. He gets, quote, better at shape-shifting, unquote, than he was at the beginning of everything. And they all changed their appearances, all the aliens, except for Morn. Morn was Morn.
Yeah, well, but somebody has to mourn for him.
Yeah. All right. And another thing that I thought we could bring up was the funding between the two projects is the main political issue at stake in this story. The Andak project to make land suitable for growing, and the Setek project to boost the Cardassian military. Both are probably needed, but there's only funding for one of the two projects, and the Federation is only going to back the Andak project, which is not surprising.
It's actually historically, if you stop and think about it, what happened after World War II in Japan?
Yeah, no more Japanese anything military.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big, if you watch the Godzilla movies, you see that being brought up a lot.
Yeah.
That the Japanese government could not build its military up or send its military overseas anywhere. And let's face it, to leave Japan, you got to go overseas.
Right.
Overseas, so.
Yeah.
The Federation is never going to fund anything to boost the Cardassian military.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
there's got to be more funding, because how much funding do you need to make a plot of land sustainable?
I don't know.
If you're talking about a Superfund type site, yeah, it may take a lot of funding, but they never addressed in the book that the land was contaminated.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's not contaminated, if it's contaminated or not. They really didn't go into what the problem with the land was.
No, they did not.
It needed to be reclaimed and developed for whatever that's worth. But let's look at the big picture of, you know, the Dominion. What was their reaction to Cardassia losing the war? They adopted a scorched Cardassia policy,
which didn't get addressed in this book.
Right. But at the same time, we know that happened. So where, I mean, there's only so much funding to go around. So, I mean, how much is it going to cost to reclaim the entire planet, which is probably what is needed?
But I don't think the Andek project postulated doing the entire planet.
No.
Just that particular valley they were talking about.
Right. And people got to eat. So the, you know, if you don't feed the people, then they are going to want to go to war. So I would say probably the ag project is probably the way to go. We can talk about military stuff later after we're able to feed everybody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then why were they trying to bring up a military project with the Federation standing over them with what should be a... They didn't go enough into the two projects to show what they were going to do, why they were going to do it, and how they were going to benefit Cardassia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're going to have a engineer in your story as a major part, the engineer is going to have to talk about the project.
Yeah. Well, it's going to take an engineer to do the job, so.
Well, is it?
Well.
I don't know how many engineers they needed to replant the trees in the Dust Bowl.
Well, that's true. At the same time, there's going to be machinery brought in that is going to be needed to be repaired or made to work in the in those particular conditions they have to work under.
But you're assuming. We're not told this again.
No, but, you know, I don't mind when an author leaves something for me to pick up the pieces and add my own parts. I don't mind that at all.
It's just in this case, I think she left the canvas away, took the canvas away.
I don't know. I don't have to be told every detail. Give me a good story and I'll fill in the blanks. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that's not the way we do things modern, the way we do things nowadays. I mean, everything has to be out there or everybody's going to complain, you know?
Yeah.
But if you think back to the old days of movie making, you know, when Count Dracula was getting ready to bite some chick on the neck, you didn't see that. The camera panned away and looked out the window at a full moon on the horizon, and you knew, and you just filled in the blank.
Yeah, but okay. The canvas was there.
But yeah,
you knew he was going to bite the girl.
Right.
We don't know what they're going to do to Andok to bring the land back to fruition and what their goals are. You know, what is a successful project?
Yeah. Well, it's only a novella. We're not going to get
a novella that's probably as many words as an old-time novel.
Yeah. An old-time novel, not a modern novel, but an old-time one. I don't think the particulars in this case were as important as what was going on in the heads of the characters. That's just the kind of the way I felt about it.
And I look for what's going on to see how they react to what's going on.
Nah, you're a scientist, though.
Right.
You're a scientist. All right. So we have a few adventures here to talk about, too. Nyra walks into the symposium on the Andak project, gets up on the stage and announces if her demands aren't met, she'll detonate a bomb she has strapped around her chest. Okay. Your thoughts?
Typical. That is just so... a product of when this novel was written. When this story was written. It's written in 2004, which is really not that long after 9/11. So suicide bombings were fait accompli.
Yeah.
You know, so, and this is how they, well, actually it's not how they did it, because suicide bombings would be, she walks in with the bomb strapped to her chest, hi, boom.
Yeah, you know. Freedom for Cardassia, kaboom, yeah. I know what you're saying.
In fact, she might be going in her mind, oops, I forgot to say freedom for Cardassian.
Yeah.
Now, me on the other hand, I was really shocked. Okay. Let's see. Gul Dukat explained how important family is to Cardassian. Okay. He regretted not being at his son's 11th birthday because he was on duty. He was going to kill Ziel, his daughter, but he couldn't do it. And he brought her on board the station and gave her a new life, and kept her safe as much as he could until he lost his mind and told her to go away. But, and for this true way to talk this kid into doing this was a little shocking to me and a little scary. And it was like, wow, this. Now, of course, Keiko was there and Molly was there. And so you knew it wasn't going to get blown up, but still the threat was there. And there was some doubt in my mind whether this was going to get carried through or not.
Okay. To me, it just felt the normal pattern of suicide bombers.
Yeah. All right. You have another one listed here, something to discuss.
Dr. Nick Thee attempts to talk the bomber down. He's walking down the aisle, headed towards the stage, and he's getting ready to talk her down. And he gets stopped. Cardassian security services set up an effort to take her out. But it's the Vedic,
Yavir.
Why can't they write these names so you can read them for once?
Yavir.
who relates to the girl and convinces her not to go through with it, with what the... I've got the true way down. I've got the Aurelian way
Aurelian,
down.
Yeah.
It's tough to keep the two different things going.
Yeah.
In your mind as to which one's which. But a Vedic from the other planet.
Bajor.
A religious figure from Bajor, despite the fact they just had a religious thingy happening in the streets of Cardassia, is able to talk the girl down and convince her not to do it.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, though. Again, here I am nitpicking on stuff. How did they get the bomb vest off her? Mm. And the reason I ask that is because today, a lot of those bomb vests are designed so that if anybody tries to take them off the bomber, they blow.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I really don't think this was a central thing. Because we knew that bomb was not going to go off. Okay, period. It just wasn't.
The thing is, the author could have had the bomb go off.
Yeah.
As long as she had done something to protect Keiko and Molly.
Right.
In the ensuing explosion. And they didn't die. They could get wounded. But as long as they didn't die, the bombing could have gone off. And the bombing could have sparked a new direction the story would go in.
Yeah. Well, then, all right, let's look at something else here, though. All right, we have Cardassians who are moving towards democracy, okay? And we have Vedic Yavir, who is representing people that were oppressed by these Cardassians for 50 years, okay? Now, my impression during Deep Space Nine is like, fine, blow everybody up. I don't care. It's going to kill more Cardassians than anything else. But he does not want this girl to do this. He doesn't want her to destroy herself or to destroy any other Cardassians because it's time for peace. Okay?
He's a Vedic.
Well, no, are you kidding me? The Vedics didn't like the Cardassians either. Nobody did. Nobody on Bajor did.
We're past the, I can't remember now what they were calling it, but we're past the period where Cardassia occupied Bajor.
Exactly.
And the Vedics have to have come to a new understanding of the situation.
Exactly.
And just to resolve their religious beliefs.
That is what Una is trying to demonstrate. At least one of the things she's trying to demonstrate is the change in attitude by the Bajorans, who are now willing to come in and help Cardassia rebuild rather than let them just rot, okay? And the Cardassians, on the other hand, are no longer militaristic and totalitarian. They are willing to take help from the outside and accept it as, you know, from the Bajorans, okay? So you've got a change in attitudes on both sides. But of course, there are factions around that aren't going to accept that. And it is that's just politics as usual. I mean, no matter what the government does, there's going to be people who are against no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be looking for a nefarious intent or something else. So I really don't think the actual events in this story are the main part of the story. That's just me.
I'm still thinking, though, that either this needed to be a much longer story and delve into the Cardassians' way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
both the ones that want to go for the democracy and the ones that don't.
Yeah.
And the Bajorans that are changing, as demonstrated by the Vedic, I think we needed to see more of that.
Yeah.
But again, it would take at least the entire printing of both stories to do that in this volume.
Yeah. Well, and I you know, honest to goodness, I think we're both right. You know, so.
Yeah.
How about concepts? What kind of concepts and things did we come up with in this?
How can Cardassia form a democracy? How can Cardassia form a democracy and keep it against the influences of the past?
Uh-huh.
Basically, I broke that down like that because both questions are valid. Yeah. How can Cardassia form a democracy? Well, Federation can come in and impose it on them.
Right.
And if you're using a prime minister, that's going to be one of the examples of the Federation come in with. And keep it against the influences of its past. I mean, what are the people going to be like? And here we go again. We need to get more into the mindset of the old guard,
mm-hmm.
and see what's going on.
Yeah. It's definitely something that is going to take time. Lots and lots of time and lots of education.
Well, will it? Think about it. How fast could Japan go from being a feudal state to being governed by a prime minister after World War II?
No, it didn't take long.
No, but it was imposed by by the United States.
Yeah. I don't think the Federation would do it the same way. I mean, it would have to be Cardassia's idea to want to change, and the Federation would come in and show them how.
Ah, but here's the thing. The Dominion War wasn't the Dominion against the Federation. The Dominion War was the Dominion against the Federation, the Klingons, and the Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
So the Federation are going to go, okay, we can suggest this new type of government.
Mm-hmm.
And the Klingons and Romulans are going to go, wait a minute, we got to make sure this particular set of people do not re-strengthen their military enough to confront us again.
Right, right.
So the Federation is going to have to take a stronger stance on what Cardassia has to do than what they would like to do for Cardassia. They're going to have their allies pushing.
Which is the concept that I identified, competing government-funded projects. How do you choose which one is right? Usually the ones that benefit most benefit the population at large are the ones that seem to be shunned in favor of what will benefit the government itself. Okay. Or you can put in there the military. Okay. There's always a bitter fight. Yeah. There's always a bitter fight on that front. Okay.
So, again, it gets back to, I got to think she was drawing from the Japanese reconstruction after World War II for most of this plotting.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, there are some real, you know, some real strong themes that you can take from the Japanese occupation and the Japanese reconstruction.
Yeah.
To come up with how Cardassia was being treated.
Yeah. But we've got two balls in the air here, okay? We got the ag project, and we got the military project. And what do you want to do? Do you want to eat, or do you want to fight? Okay, you say, okay, I want to fight. Well, you ain't fighting nothing if you don't eat. So it's only logical that we lean towards the agricultural project, in at least in my mind.
Well, that's not necessarily the case, though, because throughout most of human history, if you didn't have the wherewithal to grow enough food to feed your army, you sent your army out and they pillaged your neighbor and fed themselves.
Oh, yeah, but the thing of it is you're not going to do that when you're talking about a planet-wide thing. I mean, the next planet is far away, okay?
Unless, of course, strengthening the military gives them the ability to go to the next planet.
Yeah, they're decimated.
I don't know. It's you know, I don't know where they could get enough resources to go do it.
Right.
But there are ways around. Well, if you can't feed us, you can't have an army.
Yeah. Well, they're only...
We've shown that you can't.
Cardassia's only ally through the entire thing, as you pointed out, was the Dominion. And the Dominion is now hamstrung. They're done, okay? So the Cardassians
And the Breen are not going to help them either.
No.
Either.
No. And so the Cardassians are finished as a power. They are not a power anymore. And so they're not going to go pillaging anywhere. They need to grow food.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Favorite point of plot.
Okay. As I've been saying, I wanted more action and or more philosophy and or more politics and or just take a deeper dive. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Now there's only so much room. But yeah, I understand what you're talking about. I appreciated the way the story was written. Despite the slow action, the story was well-paced and held my attention. I enjoyed the more in-depth character portrayals as opposed to a lot of action. Perhaps the author was going for more of a story to make one think than to present an action-packed story.
And, well, you know my thoughts on that. I wanted, if she's going to go that route, give me more about what, especially the bad guys.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a really, you've got two ways to do a story when you got bad guys. You can either have the bad guys do exposition as they're trouncing the good guys, or you got to get in their heads and do internal dialogue with the bad guys so we can see what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one's action and the other is more in-depth characters.
Ah, okay. All right. And themes.
I think we both said the same thing, change.
Yeah.
I mean, if we look at it today, even if we look at it in American politics today, you're not seeing people going for the change that is going to benefit themselves. We've been fighting for the last 2 years now to get packages through Congress that are going to improve the quality of life in the United States, but we can't get them through.
Mm-hmm.
So change doesn't happen easily, even though it's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
even though it's desired.
Oh, yeah. Even when it's needed, because somebody's got a posture. So,
yeah.
And that's what it is with this story. The true way is posturing. We need to get back to Cardassian values and preserve what has been in the past, because that's the way we've been doing it for the past 2,000 years, and that's the way we got to do it going into the future.
And you know, if they're going to say we've got to preserve Cardassian values, at least once somebody needs to say what exactly those values are.
Yeah.
What are they fighting for?
Right. And then you'll find out that the values don't hold.
Right. All yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly. All right. So anyway, my response to that is change is always difficult. But it did seem like in this case, in the case of this story, that it was being rushed a bit. People don't like change.
Well,
they'll say they do.
We're back to the fact that I'm a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
We like change. Once you've proven a new theory, we accept it.
Yeah, you have to repeat it. But no, we're talking science versus something else. And science,
I know, but it's my way of thinking.
Yeah,
and that's why my thoughts are, you know, totally different than what you're coming up with.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, see, that's why you have an MS and I have an MA.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I've got more shit. What do you got?
Yeah. MA. I'm not sure. I'll have to think about that one.
Well, you've heard the distinction on those degrees, right?
Yeah.
You have a BS.
Right.
Bullshit.
BS is
You have an MS. Which is more shit.
More of the same, yeah.
No, more shit.
Okay.
And PhD, which is piled higher and deeper.
Right, exactly. Yes, I've heard that. I might have to bleep you on that. All right. So.
Hey, that's not one of the seven deadly words.
Well, there's only about three now.
Yeah.
All right, preventing.
But they're creating new ones.
Yeah, my theme that I took away from this is preventing change with violence. It's obviously not considered the right thing to do in this story, but it is often the case it takes place. I mean, you know, people try to affect change, and then finally they have to resort to violence to get change. That's throughout history, which is very unfortunate, because the people that are hurt are generally not the ones that are perpetrating the violence, but the innocents are the ones that are getting hurt.
I think you probably ought to take a step backwards on that. The violence in most cases to get change, the violence is not directed at causing the change so much as getting the attention of the people who need to make the change.
Yeah. Well, okay.
And it is possible to do the change without the violence if you can get attention from the people who can make the change.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree with that too. So closing thoughts, and let's wrap this one up.
I'm not going to say anything differently here.
Okay.
I wish the author had gone into more action or more philosophy. Boom, one or the other.
One or the other, yeah. All right, I get
for
that.
For both.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, I liked the story and was pleasantly surprised. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Una McCormick is, I've read a lot of her stuff. She's brilliant at writing some great stories. She knows how to get in the characters' heads. Okay? So there it is. For our next time, we will be looking at the first book in the worlds of DS9, the same book that this story showed up from. But this time, it's the second novella. It's about Andor, and it is called Paradigm. So, anything to add?
No, I have to finish reading the book. And
okay, all right.
See what Heather has to say about Andor and Paradigm. And
yeah.
Maybe... hers is a little longer, so maybe it should have been Triadime.
Triadime. Oh.
Or Quadadime.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Listen to us. Send us some email. Give us some suggestions. If we didn't do a Klingon book, your favorite Klingon book, let us know what it is so we can go out there and get that and stop trying to figure out what we're going to read next to keep this thing going.
Here's a thought, guys. Find a Klingon book. All right. Do we have them covered? Write the name of the book down on a $20 bill.
Ah.
And send it to us.
Yeah. That would be very nice. You can send.
And if you make it a 50, we'll consider it more.
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, seriously, we have run out of Klingon books that we know of. I mean, if there's something out there that we didn't know, for goodness sake, tell us about it, because otherwise we're not going to know it.
We're not an editor at Pocket Books, so
yeah,
we don't know all that they published.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you obviously know how to find us. So get out there and tell your friends to listen. Whether they're Klingons or Andorians or Cardassians or Ferengi or whatever they are, tell them to come and listen to us, okay? And get over there to, what do they call it, Apple Podcasts now. Give us a good rating, a 5-star rating, if you feel like we deserve it. And for Bound by Honor, I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn.
And join us next time.
Kapla!
You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!